All right, has everybody filled out a form to get a door prize? There at the door. You got to do it now, though, because we're going to start giving out stuff. Do we have all the door prizes here? Chin's got a... Oh, Rick, we didn't announce about the cables.
Yes, I will.
Okay, when?
In a second.
Okay. Okay, Rick has an important announcement about cables for you.
Okay, here we go. Steve, three more. Okay, we got a couple things here. First of all, the important part, when you come in the door, there's two maroon recycling tubs. They're full of cables. Okay, I expect them to be empty when I leave. I do not want to take them home. Okay, they're free for grabs. You cannot ask where they're from. If I tell you, I'll have to kill you. They're free. Free for Raleigh coupons. Now, there's a caveat. The one of the cables is XLR female to tippering sleeve male. Don't ask me why they bought them, but they did, and there's a ton of them. Some bozo wired pin one of the XLR to the shell of the XLR. So you need to go take the connector apart, snip the link, put it back together, and you're good to go. They're long enough you can cut them in half and have an adapter cable, or you can cut the TRS off and put a male on it, and away you got a medium length mic cable. Okay, so that's part one. Part two, this is a cool thing that Neutrik makes. It's an XLR connector. Okay, but it's asexual. It's bisexual. So now, okay, now it's a female. But wait, there's more. Now it's a male. Just what you need in your kit. They're not inexpensive. But they're pretty cool. Oh, yeah. I'll pass it around if somebody wants to see it.
I want to see it. May I start?
Yes. Okay. So, no more cables when I leave, right? Yeah. Good. Okay. So, we have 8 CDs from courtesy of PJ. We have 4 CDs courtesy of Hear Music and Dan. Sure T-shirt. A Meyer polo shirt and lanyard.
Extra large, so it's limited to those people.
Ah.
So it's going to be a...
Throw this on the stack, I guess.
Let's just go through this.
People of appropriate girth.
Yeah.
Do you want to see this?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, okay. Do the honors, please. Tom Collins.
Yay. Yay, come on. Just keep going. Congratulations.
Did you win?
Nope.
Oh. I can't. Go on.
Kevin Jablonski.
Yay.
Sticky. Melissa Dow.
Yay, Melissa.
Melissa. Did she?
No Melissa.
Oh, drat. Kirby Kaufman.
Oh.
Stephen DeVore, I think. Oh. It's Stephen. Stephen at Sad Songs. Funny how people get known by their email addresses. Jeff LeCompte. Me.
Thank you, Frank.
Okay.
Matt Stearns.
What if everybody just wrote me on this
list? Yeah, really.
You're lucky you're the only one who writes that.
Yeah.
Oh, well, it's PJ.
Let's give him one of these.
We'll give him another chance.
Let's give him one of these.
Oh, okay, there you go.
This is Uptight, Grand, and All Right, Masters of Jazz Piano, a compilation from Starbucks with Brad Meldow, Sonny Clark, McCoy Tyner, Toro Gustafson, Herbie Hancock, Oscar Peterson, Bill Evans, Ahmad Jamal, Tommy Flanagan, and Hank Jones, and Hampton Hawes. Yeah, none of these, unfortunately, are Frank's work. I wish we had some stuff that you could share.
Oh, I would have liked one.
Who?
Rob Riggs?
Yay.
Congratulations. So the next one will be Bella Luna, another Starbucks compilation with Henry Mancini, Patty Pravo, Louis Prima with Keeley Smith, Rosemary Clooney, Hugo Montenegro and his orchestra, Paolo Conte, Dean Martin, Bobby Darin, Mario Lanza, and more.
Steve Turnage.
Oh, jeez. Next is George Benson and Al Jarreau living it up.
Dan Mortensen.
No. Disqualified.
Okay.
Somebody else.
Dave Campbell.
Yay. All right, Dave. And last of the CDs is the very best of Diana Krall, who happens to be married to Elvis Costello.
And if that isn't strange, I don't know what it is.
He's got a new TV show, apparently. Yes. Yeah, he's gonna host a talk show. No, we need two more at least. Have we run out of people? Did we give some?
No,
okay. Okay, good. You gave... That was me again. I only did one.
Dan, stop in the box.
Doug Zangar?
Yay! Congratulations. And now, courtesy of Brownstone Marketing, is a Shure t-shirt. An awesome Shure t-shirt.
Is that the large large?
Pardon me?
Is that the extra large?
Nope.
This is the moderate
girth. That's a regular size. Let's just have a show of hands of people who would actually wear a double X large. Okay, I'm thinking of a number between 1 and 10. There's three. So, Steve.
Yay.
Yay. Because I say so. I'm thinking of a number. I didn't write it down. Okay, so Steve Malott got it. Okay, that's all of our drawings and stuff. Do we have any other?
Christmas presents.
Oh, yeah. We got to do the clicker thing again. Oh, and I got to get the thing. I'm not in the best position to listen here, so I didn't know that we were only getting one side of the Louis Armstrong Carmen McRae. So we're going to redo that one over again and listen to that, because that was kind of the point of playing it, is to listen to it.
Oh, yes.
Scene two, take one.
Okay. So are we ready to do that?
Must I spend a lifetime just in waiting while others have fun? I am unequivocally stating that, brother, you're done.
Stop and think it over just a minute.
I've had time to think for several days.
Let me plead my case and I will win it.
Enough of your way.
It can happen just once in a lifetime, that a touch can bring visions of bliss. So don't wait for perfection, stop for reflection. Yield with a tender kiss. Dry your tears and just think of this moment. One moment worth years.
So, Frank, when these sessions were happening, is this something that went on all day and over weeks, or how?
No, I only did that session. I would guess there probably was at least two other sessions before or after. I really didn't know what the devil I was doing that night, except to record them. Didn't know why I was recording them, and until Bob showed me this album, that's the first time I saw that I was part of it. So that's the way it goes with a big company. They don't tell you everything.
One little note about this album is it's very hard to come by. It wasn't generally released in the United States. It's an import. And it's also, unfortunately, a collector's item, and I believe the current collector's price is going up for $100 for this album.
Yeah, see that?
And it's a CD. It's not even an LP. Right. How can a CD be $100?
It's crazy. Yeah.
So when you say session, you mean that when the people gather together, the musicians and the producer and the engineers gather together to record one song, two songs?
No, in those days, Musicians Union had to record four tunes in the 1 3-hour session. And, you know, sometimes you really had to work hard to get them done because of many problems, goofs and whatever. But so I only did that. And I don't know how, well, I did two sessions. So it took me two sessions to do five tunes. Different nights. That's the first I heard of it. When Bob brought it to my attention, I had no idea that it was released. And so it's interesting.
And are you doing overdubs and splicing? Or?
I didn't do anything except the live recording of those tunes. There was no splicing or overdubs.
How about on other albums? Other
Oh, in other albums, of course, they were done. Sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, yes. Sometimes, well, I'll give you a real bad example. Barbara Streisand wanted to do a foreign language album, French, Spanish, Italian, whatever, and it took us quite a number of sessions, and we did it. And then it took quite a number of hours to splice it together so that everything sounded good. And when the tape went around, it was all white almost. And I got a telephone call from her on a Saturday morning, and she said, "I'm going to sue you." I said, "Barbara, go ahead. What have I done? That book that was written, and you said that it took forever to get those tunes resolved. That's not true." I said, "Look, the lawyer can call me. I don't mind. But before he does, you go ask CBS to show you the worksheets and the hours that was involved." So I never heard again from her. I was polite.
All right.
Stories run pretty hard with Barbara Streisand.
That was a nice one, actually.
So on these sessions, you said they would start at, you would get into work at 8 in the morning. Was Miles doing 8 in the morning sessions?
Oh, no. No, Miles mostly recorded 10 o'clock in the morning.
Really?
10 to 1.
Really? Huh.
Except for the other one that we're going to play. That was with the orchestra.
Okay,
and they came later.
Now let's proceed ahead here. The next one we're going to listen to is the Ray Conniff Singers. This is an album called It's the Talk of the Town. And here's the back of it. We're only showing it because there's the picture of Ray. And by golly, there's that studio monitor again. And look at those little headphones that they're using. That's got to be just to communicate with you rather than...
Yeah. Yeah.
He's not listening to overdubs.
Yeah, well, he was conducting and also arranging. He was busy. He also sing along with Mitch. I don't know how many folks caught him on television for years. It became such a big recording hit. Mitch, every one of them was a gold record, 16 of them. And he wanted to do his, but he didn't want to sound natural like Mitch Miller's group. So we talked about doing something different. I said, well, tell me what it is that you want to do different. Well, he said, I want feel the rhythm. I want the rhythm to be different. The singers are going to sound the same probably, but I want that background to be different. So we spent quite an hour or so developing with different sounds, equalizing, echoing, did everything. And finally we settled on this particular, and you have to listen to the opening, and you'll hear it on the drums mostly. So let's see if you can.
You're an old Snoopy, I'm an old softy, I'm just like Buddy in the hands of a girl like you.
You're an old meanie, I'm a big groupie, I'm just a buddy in the hands of a boy like you.
For me, you played me for a sap.
All right. And then it continues on.
Yeah, did you notice that opening?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's what he decided. That's what he liked. And every album that we did had to give him that same sound.
One thing you said when you were talking about that, you spent quite a while on this, an hour. I mean, you worked fast in those days. You had a finite amount of time. You had four-hour union session, and you got to get it done.
That's right, because like I said, four tunes in 3 hours, you spend an hour, that means 2 hours. Huh. And but, you know, those days, people were more relaxed than they are today, I'm afraid. So the singers hung around. They went out and had coffee, did whatever they wanted, until they were necessary to come back. And he was happy. They were rather large-selling albums. I don't know today anyway, but whether anybody knows or hears them, but they were big sellers then.
So here's how you would do the layout of the people.
Oh, yeah.
The rhythm section stayed pretty much the same. That was
yes.
your standard feature.
That was mine.
That's yeah. how you did the rhythm section.
Yep.
Yep. And you set the people on a flat riser.
Yeah, somewhat like that.
About 18 inches tall with two mics in the middle, one pointing to the men and one pointing to the women.
Yeah, just a single mic for each one of them.
Yeah.
And the great thing, and of course Ray made sure, we would listen just the singers to get their balance correctly. And once he was happy with it, that's when we would record.
Okay. And again, not very many microphones.
No.
It's pretty, no. pretty straightforward.
I didn't believe in multi-microphones.
Rick? Okay. Were the singers facing each other?
Sure. Boys on the one side, ladies on the other. Yeah. The microphone above them, maybe about this high above them.
But you could hear how it was panned hard left and right, so I'm not sure which side the women were in.
Oh, yes.
One thing that's not probably very easy to see back there, Dan's gone to a lot of trouble to put little arrows on here, and arrows point out the positions of the microphones and the direction they're facing. And in the case of the women and the men, you've got 8 facing to the left and 9 facing to the right. And you, if
Number
you look
8.
Closely at all the diagrams, you'll find a little microphone mark on which way it's facing. Part of when we were asking questions is, how did you manage the bleed? And how did you use the bleed in the microphones? Which is what helped you get away without having a room mic or mics.
What were the reverbs and echoes you were using?
Good question.
What?
What were the reverbs and echoes? How did you accomplish echo and reverb? The space is 100 by 100 by 100, so there's some there.
As I said earlier, I did use the room itself for echo, and there were a period of time that Mitch Miller and myself decided, let's try something else. So we did. We again experimented. We had an empty storeroom down in the basement. It was all concrete. Opened that door. Nobody ever looked in. I never looked in. I opened the door. I thought, hey, this might be good. We get rid of the garbage that was in there. And we experimented, different microphones and speakers, positioning and whatever. And once Mitch was happy, that's the way we left it, never changed it. And so that echo room, we then fed the output to another tape machine and ran the tape machine at the same time. So what went on to the finished tape was the output of that tape machine. It had a little tail to it, T-A-I-L, rather than just echo and it goes. So that's what we did.
And how big was this reverb chamber? Was it a big space like this?
Oh, no, not this big at all.
Well, how big was it? Was it like...
Well, I don't know. I don't think we ever measured it, but my mind is somewhere near it. I would say it was 10 by 12 or 12 by 12 room, but it was solid concrete. I mean, nothing else. And we spent time, putting the mic and the speakers until we thought we had it the way we wanted. And we never changed it.
So just to recap, you've got a room, an echo chamber, plus you're taking that and putting it through a tape machine to give you a delay to then feed that echo back in later into the song. And we're going to play that last song again here so you can hear that thing, because it's especially prominent on this.
Frank, do you recall the tape speed that you used for the echo chamber return?
15 inches per second.
It was 15. Second. Okay, thanks.
So we'll listen to that again and listen to the echo on this and how there's a gap between the end of their song and when this echo kicks in.
You're an old Snoopy. I'm an old softy. I'm just like Buddy in the hands of a girl like you.
It's especially noticeable on the women's voices to my ear. You can really hear that gap and then the the echo kick in, and that was that was their trademark. There.
Yeah, and because more on the women, they have that hive tones, and that excited the tape a whole lot more.
But that tape delayed echo was a trademark of yours, essentially, and a lot of people heard it and wondered how you did that. And
by luck. No, that's how we did it. We worked at it. You know, we had, I have to say, Mitch Miller, people laugh at him when he was conducting and all that, but the man was a brilliant oboist. He was the number one oboist in this country, classical music man. And he made the pop scene in New York City happen by what we do. He signed artists that no one knew, and we would work on getting a sound. Not everyone has a big voice, so we took the time. Once you get it down, then the rest of it is easy. You can go on forever, which we did. So, Johnny Mathis, Streisand, Tony Bennett, every one of them I had to help. Andy Williams became a big star once he came to our label. I have recorded him earlier with a label called Cadence that was owned by Arthur Godfrey. And he liked what I did. And his contract came up and said, what should I do? He said, come over to Columbia if you want. Oh, I said, well, if you give me permission, I'll talk to Mitch Miller and he'll call you. And that's what we did. And Mitch called him, signed a contract, and he went all the way. And he's still out there on television. I don't know about recordings, but interesting period of time.
Okay. Oh, and this isn't that session, but it shows how they recorded choruses. This is the West Side Story chorus. One microphone above.
Yeah. Actually, I think I could be wrong, but I would think that was an overdub. When they were finished and they still had time, they would just record that group. That's what it looks like to me.
Okay. All right, our next piece that we're going to listen to is from the Miles Davis, Gil Evans collaboration, Porgy and Bess. Mm-hmm. And here's the notes to the CD booklet and a little blow-up of the notes showing that our favorite engineer got a credit. In those days, they weren't giving credits. You can look at a lot of albums that Frank did, and you won't see his name anywhere on it. So it's cool that they're doing that. And you see the instrumentation on here, and if you look closely there, you'll see there's no piano. This is all
strings. This is one of the rare times that Miles recorded with an orchestra. And the arranger, Gil Evans, super arranger, conductor, great talent. We could not start like we do usually with just Miles and his boys. They had to rehearse because of some of the chord structures and whatever was so different that they had to go through the arrangement before we could record. And so that I found that interesting because well, it was Miles, and I thought, well, now I wonder how he's going to play. Well, he did his usual best. It's great. It's a great album. I don't know how many people have heard it, but it's a great album. I'm happy to be part of it.
And we're going to listen to track 5, Summertime.
One thing about this one, listen to how the instruments build and how instruments are added as we go along. Thank you.
Yes. Interesting album. Very well scored and played. And Miles Davis, the only trumpet player I know that has that sound when he puts that mute into the horn. He had, like everything else he did, he had tested so many different mutes, and that one, he never used another one. And it's his sound, no matter where he may be playing, that's it. And you could see some of it. We're missing the rhythm section, but it's back here somewhere.
Yeah, and we couldn't quite figure that out, so there was no diagram of that.
Yeah,
we're going to
no.
have to go by this picture.
Yeah. And that's Gil Evans over there. There's two woodwinds.
Two French horns.
And the rhythm
section
is sitting there between them.
And there's some bones there. Miles here, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, you see the bones.
Yeah. But where everybody else is, we're not real sure. But incredible. And here's one more session picture that we found of this is the sheet music to Prayer. And my man is gone now. My man's gone now during the session.
Don't we have another tune we're going to play? Or did we play both?
We're only going to play one for that one.
Oh, okay.
So our next one.
Yeah.
This Tony Bennett, I Left My Heart in San Francisco. And
this is one of my very favorite people in the music business. We became very fast friends. And Colette and I entertained them at the house a couple times, and then we went out. And whenever he played in anywhere in New York, we always got the call to come. And we'd be sitting with his family and enjoying him. San Francisco, we were starting to record that night at 11 o'clock at night. And Mitch came all excited. This is the tune he wanted to do first. And Tony said, no, I don't want to do that. So we did a different tune. Another one of the four. We got that done. And no, I don't want to do Frisco.
Tony said that?
Yeah. He said, I don't want to do it now. So we did the third tune, got that done. By this time, Mitch is furious. He said, now you produce it. I am leaving. I'm not going to stay here any longer. I don't understand his attitude. So I said, okay. So we left, and I put the talk back. Tony, it's you and me now. Let's go. So we did a take. Oh, that's great. That's great. I said, no, it isn't. It's not yours. So do another one. And finally, I said, let's go one more. I think you have it. We did the third take, and that was a take that you hear everywhere. And well, I never got credit for producing it, but it's okay. It made him a big hit. It's his favorite song, and he plays it everywhere he goes. So, but he's done some great albums and songs, just marvelous. And he's still out there, as you all know. He was here last year in Seattle.
Well, you got producer credit here. I gave you producer credit on our slide here.
Oh, yeah, I know. I appreciate that. Take a picture for me. No, but that was fun. As I said, Tony and I became very close. And even all the sessions, when he came in for a playback, he would stand in front of the console and hear it, pay no attention to Mitch. Something, I don't know what was between them, but I was the one that would either tell him it's good or let's do another one. And he said, okay. And I didn't do that to take Mitch's responsibility away, but that's the way it went. And it was, for me, it was a great feeling, really.
So was that after the San Francisco? Because you essentially produced that one, so maybe he valued your opinion from then on.
Tony?
Yeah.
No, I still... when Tony left, then you saw Tio Macero was involved, and there it was more pronounced that he listened to me rather than Tio. But, you know, it wasn't in my attitude to do that to anyone.
No. Well, let's listen to the song.
Yeah. It's a great song, great arrangement.
The loveliness of Paris seems somehow sadly gay. The glory that was Rome is of another day. I've been terribly alone and forgotten in Manhattan. I'm going home to my city by the bay. I left my heart in San Francisco. High on a hill, it calls to me to be where little cable cars climb halfway to the stars. The morning fog may chill the air. I don't care, my love waits there in San Francisco. Above the blue and windy sea, when I come home to you, San Francisco. Your golden sun will shine for me.
Well, you just nailed
that. The first thing I want to point out, if you haven't noticed, the lyrics, you hear them and you understand them. You don't hear that anymore. The so-called singers today don't know how to articulate. And they worked at it. Every one of them in that particular period of time, they worked at their diction, make sure that you understood what they were saying. And I miss that in the records of today. Even on television, I can't understand a word they say. But anyhow, that was one of them. I don't know how many albums I've done with Tony, but every one of them was a pleasure. I really enjoy them.
There's a nice discussion of the making of that track in the Mix Magazine Classic Tracks by Dan Daly, and that's the URL there. If you just Google the song, you'll get that as one of the responses or one of the hits. One thing about it, though, is that the vocal that was used on that was not the U49 It was the M49, because there is no M49, apparently. And it was a Scully 8-track recorder, Dan said in the article. And there's Tony with the...
There, you always ask me, how close is the mic? Take a look. Oh, yeah, you have it right here.
Yeah, I can look this way.
Yeah, the voice needs some air to make it be right. If you put a microphone in your mouth, I don't understand why that's done, except on the road, the big concerts, okay, but not when you're recording. Mm-hmm.
And you could really hear that reverb effect in that song.
Yeah.
Could you hear that? It was pretty cool.
That's it, Jeffrey.
it's so interesting because when Frank came in the mobile truck and I, Bob, and just Bob.
You're talking to the mic.
Sorry. We held the two meetings ago at a record store in West Seattle and the mobile truck's sitting outside. And so we could only fit so many people in the mobile truck at a time. So I'm like, okay, we'll go out to pubs and have a pint or the record store or whatever. Well, Bob actually was in the record store and bought a couple of CDs that Frank had recorded. And this was completely unscripted. And so Dan and Bob was in the same group, and I can't remember who else was in there with you, but Frank, of course. And so they're in here, and I'm like, hey, do you guys have anything you want to play in here just to listen to the sound of the mobile truck? And Bob's like, yeah, I just bought a couple of records in the store. Pop these out. So I popped it in, and Frank's like, oh, yeah, I recorded that. And I'm just like,
yeah, this was Miles, Smiles, and Porgy and Bess.
That's exactly what it was. Yeah.
Oh yeah, Frank. I did that. We're all going, oh my God.
Yeah. So it was quite something.
It was really special. So here is how you did the strings. Layout. You want to talk about that?
Sort of like, yeah.
Yeah. This is again the hack artist translation of description.
Yeah.
So
right. The rhythm section.
Same pattern.
Same place. The percussion close by also. And then there's the string section.
And you had the mics at the ends. Again, the mics are at the center facing out, but they're not centered on the strings. They're on one end. Why is that?
Well, because the sound's coming this way when they're playing.
No. Because that's why it works. How it works better.
Yeah, that's why I put
it. If you did it in the center, it wouldn't work as well. Cool.
And going back to the old days when we went to 30th Street and we only had 6 microphones, and there was a chorus, say with Tony Bennett, with this arrangement, and I didn't have a microphone for the chorus, so what I had done then, there's platforms behind the violin section up above, and I picked the chorus up on the violin microphone, and it worked so great. And so that was one of the little things I did in the early part of time.
And you put the vocal down next to the piano with a baffle.
Yes.
Well,
for the same thing, so that he's in touch with the rhythm section and any other soloist that might be close by, guitars. Yeah, it worked for me. I don't know what anyone else would do, but I couldn't be more comfortable.
And baffles behind each of the string sections
well. Again, not tight.
Right.
Just back.
Yeah. And that was an interesting thing to me about working this out with you, is discovering how you had the rhythm section in essentially the same position at every session, and you have 3 hours to do this thing. You're not going to start from scratch. You're going to do what works and get it done and get the session over with. And that was interesting.
To try other parts of the studio, and this, in my mind, was the best setup. Other engineers use different parts of the studio, which is fine. That's why we're all
different people.
We're different people, right?
And just to clarify, this is how I drew this, but how far is this distance between the rhythm section and the control room? How far are they from the wall?
Oh.
Roughly.
Well, the wall and maybe another foot or two in front of it.
Oh, so real close to the wall.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think that also helped the bass sound.
Mm-hmm. How tall was the baffle?
The baffles were about here, maybe.
So this baffle over here.
That is one of those large ones that
it's a tall
we showed
one.
Earlier.
So when you saw earlier, there was a picture of Sarah Vaughan with a big baffle behind her. Yeah. It was similar to that.
And how reflective is the wall by the control room, and did you use that to reinforce for the other mics that were around there, do you think?
Well, okay. I found that's why I liked, especially for the drummer, that he could hear himself, the sound coming back to him. And the bass player always enjoyed it also. And that's why I continued. I never thought it worthwhile after so many years to start changing on the musicians themselves. And as I said earlier, I think that I would talk to them every time, make sure that they're comfortable, because we're not using headphones, and they had to hear themselves. So it worked, obviously. Yeah.
All right, next we're going to listen to a Sinatra track,
Oh, yeah.
Which originally was on the Sinatra Trilogy album, which was actually three discs together. There was a past album, music of the past, music of the present, music of the future. And the particular song we're going to listen to was on the middle one, the music of the present. But what we're going to listen to is one that was actually on the Hear Music compilation called Fly Me to the Moon by Frank Sinatra. It's an Opus Collection reissue. And they told me they don't do any messing around with the mastering. They don't remaster it. So what we hear should be what was on the original. We don't have all the money in the world, so we didn't go out and buy all these albums, although Bob actually bought a bunch of these. Bob has all the money in the world, I guess. So, so what we're going to listen to is this track 16, New York, New York. And before we start on that, let's talk a little bit about, well, let's listen to it first and
sure.
Then talk about it. So we're going to listen to the Hear Music thing that got released in 2005 from the original album that was recorded on September 19th, 1979. Frank Sinatra vocals, Don Costa, arranger, conductor. Couple minutes?
Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today. I want to be a part of it. New York, New York. These vagabond shoes are longing to stray right through the very heart of it, New York, New York. I wanna wake up in a city that doesn't sleep and find I'm king of the hill, top of the heap. These little town blues are melting away. I'll make a brand new start of it in old New York. If I can make it there, I'll make it anywhere. It's up to you, New York.
Sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah, really. You want to talk a little bit about working with Frank and then about the process of how these records act?
Well, listen. Sinatra was Sinatra. I admire that man from the time he's 90 pounds until he passed away. And for me, I am like a school kid. I was so excited when I finally was going to record Frank Sinatra. And we hit it off beautifully because we're both Italian boys from immigrant parents. And I don't say that's why we, but I felt that way. And we recorded that song. I have recorded that song with other artists and nothing happened. But he took it and made it into a big, big hit. And was he a nice person? Absolutely. Of course, he was older then, too. But it was a joy to work with him.
Now, when you do a Frank Sinatra record, recording, you do the recordings, and what happens to them then?
Oh, yes. Right. That's a good point. Yes, I did the that same word again. The live recording. No, nothing else. Just that. But Frank owned his own label at that time, Reprise, and all the work that we did at 30th Street was then sent out to the West Coast. And then they made their decision about the tunes and the takes. And Frank also would redo the tune that he thought he could do better on. And I think we have an example to show you that. And we'll let you hear. You heard this one. This was the original. Let him hear the other first.
That's getting ahead of us a little bit. The point of this is that you do these tracks and send them off to California.
Yes.
And what happened in California,
who knows
what happens? What you used may be in there.
Yeah.
What you used may not be in there. What you did may be in there, and what you did may not be in there.
No, that's
true. There's no way to know with a Sinatra record what part of it was...
That's right.
It came from where?
Same old thing. You know, they certainly didn't call me to tell me, look, we're not going to use this one, we're going to use that one. So we just, who's going to argue? It's his money.
Yeah.
And but I've noticed differences myself in his vocals at times. I could tell, at least I think I can. Mm-hmm.
And this session was laid out pretty much the same as the Tony Bennett. So this is the same
more musicians.
Yeah,
as you can see.
Yeah, way more players. And and there was a horn section too that we didn't put in here. But lots of stuff happened.
That was another thing. When I used to had French horns in the orchestra, you all know that the horn sound comes out the back end, and whenever I could, if it was two or three, they didn't have to sit right with the trumpets and trombones. I would put them in the back. I used one of the baffles with a hard surface, and I put the mic so I would get the sound of the horns plus the bounce back of the hard surface of the screen.
So in front of them, facing back towards the reflected sound.
Yeah, I would put it right behind them.
Oh, interesting.
It's an interesting sound.
Yeah.
I like that.
All right. So what we started to talk about is that in the course of this project, we got this other CD, which is current, came out in 2008, Sinatra, Nothing But the Best, that has that same track on it, New York, New York. But it's a totally different sound, as you'll hear in a second here. It was remastered. The Sinatra family is in charge of all of that, all of the Sinatra music now. And remastered by Bernie Grundman, who is a famous and fabulous mastering engineer. But so leaving this at the same volume.
Yeah, it's important. It's going to be the same volume as the last one. We're not touching it, but you're going to hear that it's been touched. It's had a lot more compression and limiting applied to this one.
Thank you. start spreading the news. I'm leaving today.
And his voice is real dry.
I want to be a part of it. New York, New York. These vagabond shoes are longing to stray right through the very heart of it. New York, New York. I want to wake up in a city that doesn't sleep and find I'm king of the hill, top of the heap. These little town blues are melting away. I'll make a brand new start of it in old New York. If I can make it there, I'll make it anywhere. It's up to you, New York, New York.
I'll tell you, when we played the CDs as opposed to the computer thing, it seemed like the difference was even more pronounced in the volume levels. So Bob went in and has the capability of looking at the volume envelopes of the songs. And why don't you start? Do you want to talk about this?
I wanted to hear more of the stylistic differences between the two, so I cut these two together the same portion that you just got through hearing, about a minute 50.
Talk about the different levels.
Oh, you got up here. Okay, I'm sorry. I thought we were going to the cut, too. Okay, which one do we have up here?
This is the original.
All right. Look at the overall envelopes up here, and you see that this has been brought up a bit, but it's only lightly hitting the 0 dB. It's only hitting a limiter lightly, but it's fairly loud. But there's there's some dynamics still being left in this, like right there, thank you. You know, we've got some buildings, some crescendos, some dynamics left in here. Now go to the next one.
Yeah, and if you were at our last meeting, you know what these things mean.
Okay, here, so. this is the remastered one, or the one from Reprise. Notice that the same region that we were talking about, some dynamics, there's not very much left in this one. And it's been really maximized, compressed, limited. And of course, there was a different reverb sound in the whole thing. That was what they did with the vocals. So what we did was we cut these two together. You can see the comparison between the two. And are we going to do the cut together one?
Yeah, let's do the cut together one. And just so you're clear what you're looking at here, here's the beginning of the song, and here's the end of the song, and here's everything that happens in between. So these are volume levels that go up and down. And compare. So you're comparing exactly the same slice in each song if you look vertically. So like here, there's quite a bit of distance from zero, and here it's really close.
And there are a couple of differences between the two songs before we play them. The one version, there's only two hits on the drums before we start into the music. The other one, there's three hits, and one of them is 2 seconds shorter than the other. So it took a little bit to bring these together. We have brought the gains down and up to try and make them blend together, and what you'll really be able to tell now is not so much the volume changes, but the timbral changes. You should be able to really hear the reverb change as it cuts from one to the other. And do we have that picture that shows where the cuts are?
These are the only pictures I have, I think.
Oh, okay, sorry. Well, then you can, about every 30 seconds, it's going to go from one version to the next.
Yeah, that was
with the old one, Bob.
It's going to start with whatever it's, yes, it does, yes, start with the old one.
Starts with the old one first, then we go to the new style. And anybody who wants to see all the little manipulations it took to get the two to cut together, they can come up here afterwards and I'll show them.
Are we able to move this over to your computer?
Dicey.
Well, the only other slide says the end, so if it doesn't work, then...
go back, exactly. I'll
just say it.
We'll just see what happens. So are these examples of two different performances, or just two different masters?
This... Well, that's a good question. There's no way to know that.
It sounds like they're
we got a buzz.
The same performances, but there's some
certain differences.
Yeah.
We'll play with that and look later because I don't want to listen to the buzz.
Bob, try just unplugging the power from your computer.
Unfortunately, we're tied into a few other things. There's more than one ground path.
Okay.
And I didn't have.
Yeah, that's true. His computer is tied into the PA.
If you run it off the battery, the buzz will most likely go away.
Well, but the computer is not the only thing touching this. The computer is also touching the PA.
We've got another mixer up here.
Try it. Yeah, don't be so obstinate. Just do it. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Do we have a ground lift on that DI?
We have a DI.
Oh, I thought you had a DI.
Okay. Well, never mind then. What Bob did was very cleverly shift back and forth, and maybe we can do a hand signal or something to show
as
we're changing. So we're going to start with the original, then shift over to the other one.
What we think it's a new Sinatra vocal.
Yeah.
That's what it was. String edition set of overdubs in the newer one.
You listen and then you see what you think.
Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today. I want to be a part of it. New York, New York. These vagabond shoes are longing to stray right through the very heart of it. New York, New York. I want to wake up in a city that doesn't sleep and find I'm king of the hill, top of the heap. These little town blues are melting away. I'll make a brand new start of it in old New York. If I can make it there, I'll make it anywhere. It's up to you, New York.
It's a lot more subtle to my ear than you would think, but it's still different.
And you're behind the speakers, too. So that's
well, but I listened to it before. I didn't listen to it just now.
Nice editing, Bob.
Didn't he do an awesome job? I mean, it was what was sounded radically different sounded much more similar.
Yeah, it's a difference in level and different echo.
Mm-hmm.
And some of his diction was different than the second version, being a New Yorker, and you folks are, but a lot of New Yorkers don't pronounce the R as New York, and if you listen to the second take, you hear that, New York, New York, so, but you know, what the hell, what's the difference?
Yeah.
I just like my sound better anyway.
Yeah, yeah. We also noticed that the strings or the saxes moved from one side to the other.
Yeah.
At some point, and that was pretty interesting.
Right.
But that was a mixing choice of somebody.
Yeah, yeah. That fellow Grundman, whatever his name was.
Well, he was the mastering guy, but somebody could have taken the raw tracks.
Yeah, someone else.
And done a remix.
Yeah.
Too, but you don't know. It's kind of like sausage. There's a lot of little pieces in there. Yeah, Rick.
Was this multi-track?
Was that a multi-tracked recording?
Which?
The Columbia session, was that multi-track? In 79, it must have been.
Oh, yeah, it was multi-track.
Yeah.
16, I think, at that time.
16 tracks. Huh.
Yeah. But, you know, that song was recorded by so many other people. In fact, I recorded it a half dozen times with other artists, including Liza Minnelli, and never sounded, and nothing happened to it. And Sinatra did it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can hear that. It's
magic.
This is the last big hit he ever had. And I'm glad I was part of it. Mm-hmm. And at this point in his life, he was just like you and I, a nice person. Very, very polite, very kind. Hugged me. You know, we did that usual Italian bit where we hug each other, we kiss each other, and there we are.
Was that when Mia Farrow was around?
Pardon?
Was Mia Farrow around at that
time? Never. He never had anyone come. Never. He absolutely refused. I even asked if my wife could come, and they turned me down. They said no.
So it was a closed studio?
It was always just he. Huh. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, I don't know what else we...
Yeah, we've reached the end of our prepared presentation. Does anybody have any questions?
There he is again.
Yeah, I was speaking up too much. So just for everyone in the room, if you ever have the guts to play anything that you've recorded for Frank, make sure it's got the room sound in it. Yeah. Because I was brazen enough to play something that I recorded, just voicing guitar, and he's like, was that guitar DI? Yeah. How close was the vocal mic? Pretty close. He's like, yeah, don't like it.
Well, he was more polite than that. I was there.
I wasn't trying to hurt him.
No, you were very polite.
He asked me a question and I answered it. Yeah. That'll teach you not to ask.
I wanted to know.
But that is something about Frank, is that there's BS when you're talking to
him.
It's straight ahead, and that's been awesome. Any other questions or comments before we call it a night? Go ahead. Talk into the mic, please.
I will say that the version of New York, New York that you did had a much, much better bass sound. You could actually hear the string against the fretboard, against the board, and it just... It's far better. It wasn't rolled off and kind of muffled in the back, and I appreciate that as a musician.
Thank you. We heard that too, so that's why we thought we'd use it as a demonstration, so that you hear one version as opposed to the other.
I was just curious if you had any occasion or if your schedule allowed the opportunity to get to know some of the other people that were involved with as many recordings as you were. Like, I think of maybe the Bill Putnams of the world or the Tom Dowds. Did you happen to get to know those guys, or did your schedules not even allow you to get to know one
of them? I only knew Bill Putnam because he was in the Chicago Columbia studio and didn't have much to do. You know, we had California, Chicago, Nashville, New York, and everyone did their own. We had Epic Records. And the only reason we had Epic Records because Mitch Miller would not record rock and roll on Columbia. So they formed this new label called Epic, and that's where the rock stuff was done. So that was that. But I met Bill Putnam once when he came to New York City, but I had no conversations at all. Very nice man. Did you know him?
No.
Oh. Frank, didn't you spend time on the train, though, in and out of New York with Tom Dowd?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Tom Dowd was one of the greatest creators of sound that ever started in the business. He, by himself, in a little studio, a room, an office room, where he set up to record. And he didn't have a studio. They just put a mic, and he started doing what he did. And then, of course, he kept progressing. He was a brilliant engineer and an nice man, very nice man. And when I was riding in on a train, I would bump into him, either coming or going, because he was working the same days I was. And I always enjoyed our conversations, and I learned quite a bit from him. So it's too bad that he didn't last long enough to make it a real tremendous reputation. Good boy.
Well, that's the interaction between engineers is one of the good things about AES, is that when we're doing our thing, we're the only engineer there. And you don't get a chance to interact with other people. But then we have things like this where we can get together and chat and get to meet people. And this is a good thing.
You folks have made my life worthwhile being in this area, truly. And the two of you, I don't know how I can compliment you anymore, because they are the nicest two people I ever met. Very concerned, very warm. Honest in their thoughts and behavior. So I do thank the two of you in the bottom of my heart. And I don't know if Colette thanks you that well, but she always thought Bob was a nice fellow, and she just met you today. So.
Yeah, well, she still likes me so far. So
I hope she's going to say the same. And anyway, that's my bride here, and I've loved her forever. And without her, I probably would have been nothing. So
it's been really great having you here tonight, Colette. Thank you for coming.
Thank you. And when we get a copy, you'll hear that every time. Better behave.
Frank's going to walk out of here with a CD of this evening recording, and then, of course, if we do something with the video, we'll get you a copy of that, too. But thank you all for coming, and have a safe
travel. Listen, I thank you all for paying attention as much as you did. You're all very good. As I said, I never did this much. So. I hope you're leaving with having a little fun.
So thank you and good night.
Thank you and good night. Colette.
Have heard about you. From Steve Armstrong.
Oh, my gosh.
Kate.
And if anybody wants to stay and help us clean up, that would be very much appreciated.
On your card? Oh, okay. All right. I know we do, because it's horrible. I love it. You're the busy person. I'm not. So. Yeah. We're in Edmonds. 5:10. Yeah, do that. See, my mind doesn't quite follow me. Or Colette can give it to you if you want. She's right there. All right. You're very sweet, really. Was it? Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Really, I'm honored to meet you too.
You know, I've been enjoying your music since I was my son's age.
Oh yeah, great.
I'm now 54.
Uh-huh. I wish I were.
40 years. I've been listening to the music you've been recording.
But you know,
and I've been jealous of every note.
Yeah.
and then go to a club and like put your cables halfway into the inserts and get whatever. So yeah. So in those days it was really good. In these days it's a little rougher game because of what we just talked about. It really does. I think really close to
the rock star here. The brass.
Yeah.
Oh, you have the one with the brass?
Yes.
But it's a pity you no longer in the days of like that long. Exactly.